Your Latino community values education. They respect their teachers. Mm-hmm. They respect the educators. They respect the school systems that are taking care of their children. You can be data rich, but application usage poor.
Hello, welcome to this episode of Aubrey Insights, where I am here with Dr. Selena Estrada Thomas. And I'm super excited. Dr. Estrada Thomas is the executive director of TALAS, which stands for the Texas Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents. It is an amazing organization, one that Aubrey is very, very happy to partner with. Not just because it is an amazing organization, but its mission is just so aligned with the passion that we share with really growing Latino administrators and leaders to make a big impact on kids. I'm gonna go ahead and get started right here. And Selena, if you don't mind, like, give us a little background about you. Get your bio. Who are you?
Oh my gosh, you see the white hair?
It could take a while. Wisdom.
Let's see. Well, where do I start? 41 years in public education. I retired, and I'll put that in quotes, in August of 2023. My last 6 years were as superintendent of Hutto.
Hutto, yeah.
The Hutto Hippos, the only hippos in Texas and the country. And I would love introducing myself as the head hippo. I can no longer claim that title, but it's going to be my most favorite ever. Maybe my tombstone will say the head hippo. Anyway, 41 years in public education, devoted my entire life to it. Started teaching when I was 21 years old, and I did that to honor my father and my mother, too.
How so?
My father was a migrant worker.
Okay.
He came here in the 40s. My grandmother brought him in the 40s when he was about 7 years old, and he loved going to school. But he only went to school a few months out of the year because they had to leave early. And then come back late to start school because they were working the fields. In California and Michigan. And they'd go all over where they followed the work. They followed the migrant work, a lot of the work in California, too. And so he loved going to school. My grandmother only allowed him to finish the eighth grade. And he tells me the story of how one of his eighth grade teachers came to his home to convince my grandmother that Tony was bright and that he needed to go to high school. He says, well, he was the only male. He says, he's my only son. I need him to work. An eighth grade education is good enough for him right now. And so obviously dad always valued education.
Yeah.
And so one of the things he vowed was his children would never have dirt under their fingernails. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that was his way of saying my children will not only finish high school, they will go to college. And so I am one of four. I have three brothers. I'm the oldest, and all of us finished high school. We're all college grads and all professionals. And we owe that to my father. So for me, going into education, it was about honoring my father and his love for education. And I think when I walked the halls as a principal, middle school and in high school, when I saw children that I knew were from migrant families, and I know I'm getting teared up, I would see my father's face in them. And so that was my job, to make sure that their trajectory in life would be different.
I wasn't meaning to go this way, but I'm fascinated. So how would you view the cultural attitudes of particularly the migrant community, the Latino migrant community here in the United States, towards education? Do they see it as a way out?
They do. And I think that's why you have such a migration to this country, because they know education is the key. They know that they have their children educated in the United States. That's the way out of poverty.
Yeah.
Because they've seen and heard the stories of so many people who have succeeded and changed the trajectory of an entire family, an entire generation, through education and advancing. Your Latino community values education. They respect their teachers. Mm-hmm. They respect the educators. They respect the school systems that are taking care of their children.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I always struck, I taught inner city Houston for a number of years, and that was the majority mm-hmm. of my student population. And it always struck me as like, the students would very much value it and the families would very value it.
Yes.
On the one side, though, and this is more of a social commentary, like both mom and dad would be working three jobs, right? And that component of like they really care, the emphasis on the importance of education, at the same time, you know, they're working all the time.
They're working all the time, but this is why there's so much trust given to the school systems.
Well said. Yeah.
And we as educators need to be humbled by that, yeah. that we are trusted with their children and with their care and with their future. Not that they don't care, they do, but they're trying to put food on the table.
Yeah.
And that's for a certain segment of the population, right? Those folks that are really struggling economically.
Yeah.
But your middle class, upper middle class folks, they see the value in education.
Oh,
Very much so.
I love that.
I don't think that's ever going to be lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, there's so many fun ways I can go with this conversation. So I'm super excited about this. This is a double passion for me. I love all things Latino culture, you know, and you know this working with me, just the passion of serving these kids. So let's talk a little bit about how about you give a little bit of an overview of what is Talas in a little bit more detail, and then I got a whole bunch of questions I'd like to dive in with that.
So Talas is an organization that looks to leaders who are educating our Latino population. And granted, it's an association of Latino administrators and superintendents, but it's not exclusive to Latinos.
You don't have to
be a Latino to be part of the organization. The idea is that there is a focus on our Latino students in the classroom, and that there are unique needs, and they are now the dominant minority in the state of Texas, right?
Yep.
Latin children represent 53% of the population. Mm-hmm. So at any given time in any school district, you're going to come across a Latino student. And we must recognize, depending on the generation of that child, whether they're a recent immigrant, first or second generation, there may be needs as far as bilingual education, second language acquisition. And we must be cognizant of those and sensitive to those learning needs of the student, whether you have one emergent bilingual in the classroom or you have half of your classroom as emergent bilinguals. As an educator, as a teacher in front of those children, as an administrator who oversees the teachers in those classrooms, and then as central office folks who support administrators, we must be aware of the learning needs of our Latino students. So our organization is about building leaders who know how to address the varying needs of our Latino population. Because now we cannot assume that all of our emergent bilinguals are just coming from the Spanish language.
Oh, yeah. Especially in Texas.
And so we have children from all walks of life, from all languages. I think in Fort Worth, you have over 100 foreign languages spoken.
Yep.
In my previous school district, we only had 10,000 kids. We had over 26 languages represented. And so we must, while we are an association of Latino leaders and superintendents, Latino leaders and learners, it's about meeting the needs of our children.
And especially so,
one of the key areas that we focus on is that second language acquisition.
Okay.
Yeah, the dual language.
Yeah.
So dual language applies again to any language, not just Spanish, although Spanish is the dominant.
Yeah, it's interesting. So my wife is a ESL teacher.
Yeah.
And again, that dominant, like, how do you acquire a second language?
Mm-hmm.
And then also being cognizant that it's not just Spanish because, the methods and the frameworks for learning a second language can be applied across the board, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it is. But, but not necessarily just falling back immediately onto Spanish if you just assume, because you're going to have a classroom where it's going to be like, the majority will be Latinos, but you still have a huge percentage from Vietnam or other places as well.
Well, and another focus for our organization is growing leaders. So when you're a member of a state organization, you expect something for your membership.
Yep.
And one of the key features about our organization is that we offer networking opportunities.
Yes.
And on a level that is meaningful to you. Yes, you can come to state conferences and state opportunities, but I'm really proud of the work that we've done with the affiliates in creating ground level organizations where you can meet peers from your surrounding school districts, get to know one another, problem solve together.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest advantages and one of the most powerful pieces of the networking sessions that we have.
Yeah.
Is you get an opportunity to talk to other people who are maybe experiencing similar
yeah.
or parallel problems that you have. And how do you normally solve big complex problems? It's not by yourself.
No.
And not going into yeah. a thinking room and doing it all by yourself, but yeah. you need like-minded people
yep.
Working in a safe space where you can just put your heart out there and say, I'm really struggling. Like I had an administrator reach out to me, and I'm actually going to put this in the newsletter. She sparked me to think about how can I get help for her. So she says, Selena, can you connect me with a school district that is doing a bang up job with TELPASS data at the high school level?
Okay. Yep.
And how can I help my English teachers really use this data effectively so that they can tailor their instruction to meet the needs of their dual language, their second language learners, because at the high school level, it's just very different. A lot of those yeah. kids just get lost in the crowds. And I was breaking myself. I said, oh, I wish I knew. And is it Dallas organization? I should have those types of organizations at my fingertips. So we're going to, in our newsletter, in our weekly newsletter, we're going to create a problem of practice corner.
Oh, I love that.
And I'm not going to name the district. I'm just going to name the problem.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
All right, folks, we have a member district that has reached out to us with this problem. If you're having success, or if you've bought support materials or a program or a training program for your teachers, what has been successful for you, and can you share it? And I'll connect you. So
yeah.
my job would be to connect the district who approached me about that problem with someone who's doing a good job with it.
I love it.
And then, you know, every week, if somebody calls me with an issue they're having, we'll put it in the problem of practice corner and see who connects.
Yeah.
You know, if someone is having a problem with using data effectively, hey, contact Aubrey, right? Because I know you all came.
You know a guy.
I know a guy. And not only do I know a guy who knows how to make data accessible and meaningful to teachers, he's got people on the ground level, district level people who have demonstrated success with that. And here's yeah. the connection. Now go.
Yeah, I love that. What's the Just for like folks like down linear, like the structure of kind of like the Thales Alas organization. I mean hierarchical from like the mm-hmm. ground up to the national level.
Okay, so Texas obviously is an affiliate of the national mm-hmm. organization of Alas.
Alas.
Yes, of Alas. Mm-hmm. So we operate under their umbrella. Now we call our affiliates, our local affiliates, I really should be calling them chapters so
okay.
that we can have that delineation.
Delineation, yeah.
But the word affiliate has kind of...
Sometimes it just is what it is.
Sometimes it is what it is, but it can get confusing because Texas is really the state affiliate. And then all of the local affiliates, again, should be chapters. But right now we're calling them affiliates. And like I said, really proud of the fact that we've got five
yes.
established and off and running.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we're going to El Paso. So one of the things we're going to do, Dallas has an annual conference. And in the past, we had always partnered with TASA. And that was fantastic because we could really tap into all of the people that were attending TASA. But we said to ourselves, we have these local affiliates. What if we take our annual conference on the road and just rotate it among the affiliates? So now you have more local people that are able to attend the conference. And El Paso already has a proven record. They've had their annual mini conferences, and they've attracted over 300 people to attend. So this year, May 16th, 17th, we will be in El Paso and in La Paseo del Norte. I hope
uh-huh.
you will join us because
yes.
you're a platinum sponsor.
Yes, absolutely.
So you need to be a part of that. And we're just excited to be able to offer that opportunity to all of the Region 19 school districts. And we're also going to reach out to New Mexico and Arizona.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
Sorry, that was a long-winded
response. No,
I love
response. It. And you just, there was just a new affiliate / chapter that started? Did I knew that quite?
Yeah.
Or?
So we have, do you want me to name them?
Yes, please. Yeah, okay. Let's get them out there. Yeah.
So we have El Paso.
Yep.
They've got, this is their fourth year in existence. But in September, we had Central Texas Thales launch and Tarrant County launch in Fort Worth. And then in December, we had the Houston HTX launch. And then right now, we've got the Alamo area in San Antonio. And percolating and organizing is a group out of Dallas County. I'm calling it Dallas County right now because they haven't really solidified their name. Then I've got another one percolating along Region 2, which is the Coastal Bend. And then my favorite, not for anything other than because I'm from the Valley, and I'm thinking the Valley should have been the first one, but it's okay. They're going to come along. They're going to be number eight. And the Valley is so funny. Our main organizer, Dr. Bobby Trevino, the superintendent in Zapata County, she's calling it Dallas 956 because, you know, that's the area code along the Rio Grande Valley. And that's really a point of pride for a lot of my folks down there because they all have the 956 area code for their numbers. So I think that's cute. Dallas 956.
I love that. Okay, so I want to ask you a question a little bit of an overlap between what Abre does as you've gotten to know us. And particularly, we've had a lot of conversations with Dallas to start thinking about data.
Data.
And how best, I guess I'd just like to ask you the question, like, as a former superintendent and also having an understanding of what we do as a company, just understanding, like, what would you describe the needs and even maybe some of the frustrations that you had in trying to, you know, get the data you needed and understand and go with that? Just any kind of narrative around that and any observations that you would have with that?
So with regard to data, you can be data rich, but application usage poor.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very common problem across any school district, not just Texas, really anywhere you go. So the challenge for leaders is how do you make data not only accessible, but then when it's accessible, how do you really train your users, whether it's a principal, assistant principal, down to your teachers and, you know, instructional coaches? How do we train them to where they're not overwhelmed with what they can see on a dashboard?
Yep.
Right? So really training them on how to hone in on those pieces of data that are really meaningful to them, that can shape instruction, and that can really help track student learning. And so I think that's part of the challenge. All right, folks. You're going to open up this massive dashboard, but let's not be overwhelmed by what we see. This is the problem we're trying to solve, and I think that's where you start, right? What is the question we're trying to answer for this particular student, all right? So Zach, he's sitting in my classroom. What is it that I have to solve for Zach? So going in with a question and then looking at the data, what data do I need to answer this question about Zach?
Yep. Yeah, and keeping it to a degree, I mean, having been in the classroom, I love how you're saying this, like, you can be overwhelmed. Cognitive overload, right?
Cognitive overload.
And how do you create a system, or how do you think about data where, again, I mean, most teachers are in the profession because they are passionate about kids. They love them, and they're trying to do best. So how can you make it not cognitively overwhelming and then translate that into action immediately to help the students around them and how to go about that? So thank you. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something that we see, like that wrestling that can definitely happen quite a bit. I think, like, in the context of Latino students or English as a ELL students who are learning, like, this is another one that I found for data can be very helpful, because I think sometimes as a teacher, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, you might have a couple preconceived notions about the students based on, like, an interaction that you might have. But then when you dive into the data, you're like, whoa. Like, I mean, I remember, like, I'm just case in point, I had this student named Raul, and, like, hardly spoke any English, you know, and I'm teaching social studies, all that kind of stuff. And, like, again, my couple interactions with him, just like, oh, he's kind of your average kid, et cetera. And then I got a couple reports back, and I'm like, holy smokes, kid, you're a freaking genius. Like, you know, and that mismatch between, like, I need to get you in to a different class and do that. And just how powerful that can be.
Yes. I remember speaking to a group of kids at the high school, our ESL classroom, and had all the kids do introductions. The vast majority of the kids were from Cuba, Venezuela, Colombia. And one of the things they said to me was that the math we were doing, the math that we were trying to teach them, they already knew how to do. they just didn't understand, obviously, the language or how to read the problem. But when they finally understood that, the math was just second nature to them because they had had extensive instruction in mathematics in their home countries. They weren't coming here in a vacuum. And you're right. I think we make some assumptions that... Because you don't know a language, you must not know anything.
Yeah, you must not know anything. I'm just like, that's not the case.
And so we've got to be sensitive to, you know what, the academic capital that kids are equipped with, that they're coming with. But I think I didn't have an opportunity to work with Aubrey directly in Hutto because you all came in afterwards. I left.
Yep.
However, we had been looking for a data dashboard because not only did we want to make data accessible to our teachers, but our board also wanted to see progress. And we had been on the hunt for that. And we thought we had found one and it wasn't doing what we needed it to do. And I know you've come in and just in my conversations with some of my colleages, they're really
They're very enthusiastic about us.
Yes, they are. And of course, that speaks volumes because if the user is finding value in how the data is accessible and how they can use it, it's a win-win for you and for them.
Yes, love that. Okay, so kind of wrapping up here, I do have like kind of two core questions I want to ask you. Like, one is, this is a podcast about insights into education, and really, you don't get into education unless something brings the passion, something really gets you there. And you kind of alluded to the value of education that your father gave you, but I would love to ask you. Is there a moment or an incident in whether it was your time as a student or through your career that really stands out to you in the sense of this is it? This is why this is purpose. I'm just curious if you have you probably have many, but one that you would pull out. I'd love to hear that story.
So I've been in elementary settings, middle school settings, high school settings. I spent 10 years as a middle school principal. Those were so fun. It was like...
Middle school's the best.
Middle school's the best.
Sorry, I had to say.
Yes. It's like Groundhog Day. It's the same day. You don't even remember what happened yesterday. It's a brand new day.
Yes.
Yesterday they hated you. Not
today. They're like, we love you.
We love you. And then, of course, then I did 9 years as a high school principal. And I guess it was that first high school graduation. And what really stands out to me as the kids cross the stage, you know, you shake every student's hand. And so there was something about that handshake and that eye contact that would tell me the student is ready.
Yeah.
And there were some others, Zach, that just kind of broke my heart. I said, oh, sweetheart, you need some more time with us. And I think we are so time-bound, course-bound, annual-bound in that you've got to do certain things by first grade, by second grade, by third grade.
Huh.
But that's not how learning occurs.
Or life
occurs. Things you're learning and your success aren't determined by your age or by your grade level.
Yeah.
Some of us are ready. There were some kids who I knew were bored as sophomores. They were ready. They were ready to tackle college. And I'm so thankful for our community colleges who partner with school systems and make college courses available for kids, because there's kids who are ready for that level of rigor by the time they're 15 or 16. But yet there's others who need more time. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, but we make it a stigma to be held back or to not graduate with your peer class.
Yeah.
So if there was something that I could have done differently, I wish I had a wand to really take away these time and age constraints to learning.
Yeah.
And you've got some systems that
do it. Yeah.
That
are getting closer
that do that. Yeah. And I think that's what's happening with our charter systems right now is that parents are looking for those options. And it's funny, we talked about this in our leadership development course, is that in many instances public schools were failing to educate. Now, we do a fantastic job because we educate the masses. Right, bring us your hungry and we will feed them.
Yeah.
I don't want to get.
We can go there later. That's the next podcast.
Yeah. That's the next podcast. I think we do a beautiful job of taking care of our communities and our families, but we're still very traditional in how we do schools, and I think there's better ways to do it. So going back to that very first year as a high school principal, when we were graduating the kids. Some I knew were going to be ready and they were going to flourish. And there was others that I said, I wish I could keep you one more year.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Wise words. Okay. So the last funny question we like to ask, the nostalgia question, as someone who looks back over the arc of their career and just experience in education, if there would be, if you could sponsor this episode by some nostalgic thing, product, etc., what would you pick?
I don't know. You know, I think it would be the eraser guys. You know, the big fluffy erasers with all the chalk dust.
Yes.
I think that there was something forgiving about that. When you made a mistake, just erased it.
Yeah.
And you started over.
Yeah.
We don't do that. Everything's on a computer, and even though you type something and you erase it, it's not the same. It doesn't go away. There's something magical about being able to take an eraser and wipe away the mistake and start over.
I love that. That's great.
That's what came to mind.
No, that's great. So, I love that.
Mr. Eraser, I guess.
Mr. Eraser. Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so funny. And you could riff off that. That could be, there's an aphorism there somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
I love that. Cool. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for this conversation. I love working with you and working with, or partnering with Dallas, Dr. Kennedy as well. I mean, the organization all the way up to Alas, just a fantastic, fantastic missionally and people, just really good people in it. So
thank you, Zach. And just know that we value and just appreciate your sponsorship as well. It gives credibility to our work as well. So it's a two-way partnership. Yeah. The feeling is mutual.
Yes. Well, that wraps up today's episode. And I just want to say thank you to Thalas and Selena for this really fun interview. And we bring her back someday and just keep talking about K-12 education.